Good evening, Raphael. How are you?
I'm doing very good. How are you, Russell?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. Busy weekend coming up for us both. You've got your plans to come over, not before the over to Wales, not before the Andorra game though. We spoke earlier in the year before the fixture in Israel. I think we caught up again afterwards, looking back on the game. So it's nice to catch up with you again. If there's any sort of Wales followers, Wales fans who a little bit sort of late to this particular party in respect to the podcast and what we've done, would you just like to sort of introduce yourself and just give a little bit of background of who you are and what you do, because they may not be familiar with you, though I imagine most Wales fans are now by now.
Well, my name's Raphael Geller. I'm an Israeli journalist. I work for a BBC World Service and also Vice Sports and a few other places as well. A freelance journalist. I cover the national team and Maccabi Tel Aviv, which I've just made it to the Champions League group stages, which is a very big accomplishment. But I also, one of my jobs is to keep an eye on all our players abroad. So I spend a lot of time watching, basically every league, from the Belgian league to the Russian league to the German league to basically wherever there's an Israeli, I watch those leagues. So then I get familiar with the players from all the other teams, and the joke of people who know me is I'm more interested in a boring match in Russia or Belgium than in a top clash in the Premier League, but that's just who I am and that's not going to change.
Okay. Well, thanks, as I said, I'm sure most Wales fans on social media who follow us probably follow yourself as well and are familiar with your coverage of the Israeli team and Israelis abroad, and probably had a good opportunity to catch up with you when we visited Israel earlier in the year. So I'm sure we'll be looking to reciprocate that when you come over on the weekend. Yeah. I noticed from the squad, I mean, I'll be absolutely honest with you, before we spoke earlier in the year and before the previous fixture, I wouldn't have been awfully aware of that many of the Israeli squad. I mean, I had a couple sort of playing in England or Scotland were on the radar, but a lot of the others I don't suppose were. So it's interesting kind of see the squad being selected this time. Names that we're a bit more familiar with, like Gershon, like Demari, they've not been selected. They're not fit, I think. Is that going to be a bit of a blow?
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a blow. I mean, Demari is a player that is one of the most expensive transfers in the history of Israeli football, moved from Austria Vienna to Red Bull Leipzig in the second division in Germany for over 5.5 million euro, but he never really did anything there for the 6 months he was there, and then had to end up being loaned out to their sister club, Red Bull Salzburg. But yeah, I mean, it is a blow. The RFL, I think, is the biggest blow, just because he is coming off one of the best seasons of his career. He was one of the best players in Belgium, happened to win them the Belgian Cup against Anderlecht. For the most of the season, they were in first place. He had a great amount of goals and a great amount of assists, and he's a very important part of the team. When it comes to Demare, the reason why it's not that big of a deal, at least in my opinion, is we still have very good strikers like Tomer Chemed, who's really a lot of people in the United Kingdom will be familiar with him because his Brighton squad are in first place in the championship. It's very early, obviously, and he just had a brace this weekend. Amunis de Boer has been linked with Palermo and about 10 teams in the Bundesliga. He already has 7 assists, and it's September 1st. He also has 8 goals. And of course, the biggest name, I guess with the injuries, Rami Gershon in the defense was a starter, so that's a big blow. And unfortunately also for him, he won't get to play in the Champions League for Ghent. So those are big blows. Sharon Yeni, also from Vitesse in Holland, it's another big blow. But, you know, like I said, we have our strikers, and I don't know how much people know about Nir Biton from Celtic, but he is slowly becoming one of the most respected players in Scotland, and I am 100% sure that in 2 or 3 years, maybe even next summer, he'll be on a top 8 team in the English Premier League. And then Iran Zahavi, I mean, people need to know what this man has done. He has scored over 60 goals, league goals, in the last 2 years. He has 14 goals in Europe in the last 2 years. He has 7 goals this campaign. He single-handedly took Maccabi Tel Aviv to the Champions League by getting by Basel, which in my opinion, Basel are one of the best teams in the world outside of the big leagues. So we still have a very good team. There are injuries, but all the guys I just named are going to play an important role. So we still have an exciting team. The injuries are tough, but most national teams go through injuries. We're still very confident with the team we have that we can get a good result. There's not really any special new names that I should mention that people should be aware of. It's relatively the same old squad with those injuries and a couple guys brought in. The one thing to keep an eye on that's a bit interesting is that there might be a switch at goalie. There might be a new goalie for the first time in this campaign. But even though, you know, I don't think that's much of an influence on the match.
I mean, is Gutmann going to look at the Andorra game first as an opportunity to maybe just rotate a couple of members, maybe keep a couple fresh? Or is he going to need to put out first choice side or first choice available side, fill the boots against Andorra? Because I mean, there's no doubt you're going to get 3 points there. Or does he look to try and just sort of just rotate a couple of things maybe?
I think the team we'll see on Andorra will not be the team they'll play on Sunday. There's a very good chance that Zahavi might start as the striker, even though that's not his actual role, and you could have some of the actual strikers, guys who actually play the number nine in their clubs, play on the wings, which would be a very, very attacking style of football. But Andorra, I think, you know, it's at home. The stadium didn't get sold out, which is unfortunate, but it also makes sense. You know, it's a Thursday night, and there'll still be 20,000 people there, which is still relatively nice crowd. I think people are very disappointed about the last three matches, you know, the loss to Wales, Belgium, and then recently Bosnia. I really kind of took, you know, everything out of the fans. But at the same time, 20,000 against a team like Andorra is not bad. I personally think that Israel has to do whatever they can to get a very good performance, because this match against Wales, in many people's opinions, it might be the most important match for Israeli football for the next few years, just because of the group that Israel's in the World Cup with Spain and Italy. You know, there's no third place in the World Cup group, so that Israel's not going to make the World Cup in 2020 unless a team like Italy has a monumental collapse. So this is kind of it. I mean, yeah, I meant the World Cup 2018. We're in 2015. The next realistic tournament to qualify for after this is 2020. That's 5 years. A lot of these players who are 27, 28 won't be on that team.
Yeah.
Mostly will be U21 guys. So suddenly this game is just massive, because if we lose this game and Bosnia gets a point from one of their hard matches, it's over. I think 1 point would be very, very good for Israel. If we get 1 point, we'll be very, 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 very happy. It's going to be very hard. I think we respect Wales a lot more. I think we really didn't have any respect for them in the first game. I think we saw the performance against Andorra and said, oh, they barely beat Andorra. We thought the performance against Belgium was kind of a fluke, the draw, that is. But we learned the hard way, obviously. And we saw your performance against Belgium, which, to remind the Welsh fans, Israel had a similar performance. We lost, obviously, but we only lost 1-0, and Israel played a very, very good second half. And many people say the first goal that the Belgians scored in, like, the 11th minute was offside. So Israel actually played really well against the Belgian team. At the same time, what's interesting, really quickly, I know we have a lot more questions, but really interesting is that I think it's almost opposite this time. I think maybe the Welsh fans and the team will look at Israel like, oh, it should be really easy, when maybe it won't be. It's kind of flipped like last time. Because for many years, I don't want to say Wales wasn't a top team, and it wasn't such a hard fixture when you saw them. It was a winnable, you know, especially for Israel, a country of 8 million people. We're not a tiny country. Many people think we are. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Welsh team plays, if they give spacing and things like that. That's something I think we'll notice in the first 5 minutes.
No offense taken in terms of calling us not a big team. I think that's entirely reasonable. I mean, I think when this campaign started, or certainly when the campaign was, when the group was drawn, I think a lot of people felt that it was going to be a fight between maybe yourselves, Bosnia, obviously, for second, and then you had that sort of consolation spot of a possible third spot as well. Maybe Cyprus outsiders. We've lost the last two times we've gone to Cyprus, but you know, as you know, we're unbeaten. Oh, we've lost once, sorry, in 2 years. We've slowly kind of gone through the gears. We've built up this terrific team spirit along the way. Momentum has come into the campaign. And I think, you know, somebody was going to get a bit of a beating, to be perfectly honest. And I think, you know, unfortunately for yourself, it was Israel. But we think there's another gear or two in this team. And, you know, you've referred to a couple of injuries that you've got. We've got some fitness doubts over James Chester in defence. Hal Robson-Kanu up front. They haven't been ruled out. I mean, they're still in the squad. A couple of other sort of fringe players not available. The biggest loss is Joe Allen. He's suspended. So we've called up a youngster at Liverpool who's out on loan at Swindon Town called Jordan Williams for this game. That's his first full call-up, but I'd be surprised if he played. So with the exception of Allen, and as I said, some fitness doubts over Chester and Kanu, you know, we've got a fully fit squad and players have started the season well, albeit it's still early days in the Premier League. Bale scored twice in Real Madrid's first game, I think, on the weekend. So we're going into this doubleheader as well as we could hope to do so. Allen is a big loss. I think he's absolutely critical to the team. He sets the tempo. He joins defence with attack, you know, really, really well. He's great.
He was the man of the match by BBC Wales in the match here in Israel.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent. I mean, Bale gets all the headlines. Of course he does. He's going to.
Right.
But, you know, Bale's only going to keep defenders on their toes so much if he's not getting the ball or if he's not getting the space. And what Allen does, he just gives the team time. He can neatly deliver the pass. He puts a terrific weight on the pass. And that's one of the things that has always made him stand out when he came through at Swansea City. He's able not only just to pick the right pass, but to play the right weighting of pass. And, you know, if Bale's making his runs and it's a ball over the top or it's a ball into the channels, Allen invariably can pick it. But he's not alone. You know, we've still got Aaron Ramsey and, you know, he scored in the last game against you. And, yeah, I think, you know, we're going into it fairly confident, to be honest, notwithstanding, you know, a difficult trip to Cyprus. But even there...
Don't you think that, I mean, it's kind of one of these trap matches where everyone's kind of looking ahead to Israel, but Cyprus is not, they're one of the best national teams in the world for the size of their country. Don't you think this kind of like it could be this weird opportunity for Cyprus, because no one is talking about how Cyprus also has 9 points and they're also alive, and if they somehow, you know, have a nice run of matches towards them, they could also get the third spot. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they're not out of it. I think the way we look at it, I mean, I think the other thing for Cyprus is that they've got two games at home this round of fixtures. So, you know, that's probably an opportunity for them to go into camp. There's no travel in. The squad for them was probably selected, you know, quite a long time ago. They probably got together at the earliest opportunity. But, you know, they need 3 points against us. And, okay, we're going to Cyprus. But they really need to put a lot into that fixture. And you know, we're not going to take it lightly. I'm certain, as I said, we've lost the last two times we were there. But very, very few of these current crop were in that side. Or those sides for those two games, and just, you know, morale and the cohesion and the team spirit and a lot of the more peripheral backroom things are just completely different. And I think you're going to see a similar game plan to how we played in Israel, where we can be compact, we can let the other side have the ball, we can leave it for them to try to break us down, but we will hit teams on the break. And I think one of the things that I remember we spoke about this, you and I, after the last Israel-Wales game, that your forwards pressed quite a bit. And I remember you saying that, you know, you were looking or expecting to attack because that's where the strength of the Israeli side is. It's not in defence. And what right. was quite apparent very early on in the game in Tel Aviv was that the defenders were really scared of the potential for Bale and Robson-Kanu to get up ahead of speed and you know, run at them. So they were dropping deeper. The forwards were pressing and it just left acres of space in the midfield. And I think if Cyprus looked to try to do something similar, I think we've got the players to just pick that off and you know, work on the break. I think we've got a game plan and a tactical arrangement and versatility as well, I think, and flexibility to be able to deal with, you know, going away and sitting compact, not sitting back and defending deep necessarily and just playing on the counter-attack, but just keeping space to a minimum. And I think we'll probably do something similar against Cyprus, which puts the onus on them to break us down. But what's interesting is that I think the player that scored, I forget the names now, but the player that scored both the goals against Bosnia, the player that scored a hat-trick in this campaign for them already, aren't in the squad. So I don't know the circumstances behind that, but it seems to be that for both of our games coming up, Israel are missing some key players, Cyprus are missing some key players, and I think, you know, you look at that, you know, you've got to be confident. You're sitting on top of the table, as we are. Belgium not been able to score against us in 180 minutes. So I'm not too sure that perhaps Cyprus in particular, and possibly yourselves, are going to be able to test us, you know, any more than Belgium did. So as I said, I've got to be honest, we are confident, and it feels a little bit weird because usually we're not that confident. But there's a lot of optimism, as I said just before we started recording.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got to have it after you obviously look like you can compete and beat a team like Belgium. You should have the confidence. It's not like the, you know, one match you tie them and the next you lose, you win. I think it's an interesting weekend for everyone in the group. There's also a massive match of Bosnia and Belgium this Thursday night. That's just very, very important as well, because if Belgium wins, it really kind of helps us. And if Bosnia wins, it just kind of really shuffles everything up again and makes it that maybe Belgium could somehow slip out. Not likely, but there are crazy scenarios where probably not you guys, but there are scenarios where Bosnia and Israel could finish second and third and Belgium could come out. I know that sounds crazy, but Belgium's only 2 points ahead. And if Bosnia can win this match, that would put a lot of pressure on them. Luckily for Belgium, the ending of their campaign is relatively easy since you guys have already played them twice. But the crazy things can happen in football, and if Belgium loses to Bosnia, they'll be tied on points, and then you never know what happens. And really what's going to be interesting, because this group is wide open, if Cyprus can get a shocking result against you guys, I don't think they're going to, but you can't say that they're not going to.
I mean, they opened the campaign with a surprise, you know, by winning in, I think it was in Bosnia, wasn't it? Yeah. You know, nobody was expecting that. And that really put Bosnia on the back foot, so.
Right. I just think that people need to realize that we have a very, I mean, I'm sure they do realize, but we have a very exciting, definitely this weekend is very exciting. But the one in October, I mean, we just have a wonderful group. Everyone's competitive. It's really great for any football fan to keep an eye on our group. There's so much exciting stuff, whether it's Wales qualifying for their first tournament since the World Cup, whether it's Israel qualifying since we moved to UEFA. It'd be our first tournament ever in UEFA. It's when we made the World Cup, we weren't with UEFA. So there's whether it's Cyprus getting the shocking third place over Israel, and just everything about Bosnia. And, you know, being in Bosnia is one of the most amazing countries I've ever been in my life. After everything they'd gone through,
with
the war that was only 20 years ago, for them to get back in the World Cup, in the Euro, obviously they were in the World Cup. It's very, very exciting. And besides Andorra, who, you know, don't really have the best story, everyone here has a story. And that's one of my favorite things as a journalist is to listen to the stories of every team. And every one of them has one, and there's lots of great players coming out of Cyprus. They have that young 17, 18-year-old who's with Juventus, or on the youth team of Juventus. And it's just going to be a really fun weekend. To tell you guys the truth, for everyone listening and you, Russell, I'm a bit bummed that I'm going to be at the Israel-Andorra match, because I'm much more excited to watch, you know, Wales, Cyprus, and Belgium, Bosnia. That's much more important to our group than the Israel and Dora. And I mean, I'm not going to be able to see anything except the highlights when I get home. And, you know, there's not really much to write about the Andorra-Israel match. It'll be what it'll be. But it's very exciting. I mean, I don't think I've been excited about this kind of round for a really long time. I just wish we see really good football, and you know, Wales deserve obvious time. You know, it's time for them to qualify, whether it's first or second place. I think it's time. I think I can just see it by all the tweets and the energy and the coverage from BBC Wales that people are ready for it. And this is the team, the hashtag, you know, not to sound corny, but it really seems like it's now or never. And with 14 points, you'd have to have a monumental collapse, 3 out of 4 losses, which I don't know. Do you see that even possible?
I don't. Having said that, we've got closer than this and still fallen short in the past, and you're stretching back over, you know, 30, 40 years. So there's a very dark black humour attached to the Wales fans, and the sense that, you know, we will only have qualified once we've qualified, and that, you know, if anyone is going to foul it up at this late stage, then it's going to be us. But I think in truth, the way the fixtures have panned out, the pressure that has kind of been put onto Belgium having lost to us is such that they've got to go into that Bosnia game now, and you know they're probably looking, they do need to win that game. I'm not sure they ever would have gone into it not looking to win, clearly, but there is pressure on them coming off the defeat in Cardiff. So just the way the fixtures have been arranged has been really, really good for us, and I don't think we can mess it up from here. Personally, I think we'll qualify. When we did our more sort of routine podcast, all of us last week, there was optimism that you know, we're pretty much there, and there is a scenario that sees us actually qualify if we win both games this weekend, that actually sees us qualify before this weekend is out, which means we'd have 2 spare games, and that's actually quite astonishing when you put it that way, because that is something unheard of. I mean, if we were going to be qualifying, we were expecting to have to be squeezing every last bit out of every game and to be taking it to the wire, and to do it possibly with 2 games to spare, which means there's nothing riding on the trip to Bosnia. That's really quite astonishing for us, really. So
it's amazing. I mean, listen, I've kind of felt like, you know, I have this new little place in my heart for Wales.
It's very kind.
People are very friendly. I mean, it's a very similar story to us, whether it's the population. I mean, not population is not so similar, but being a smaller country, being surrounded by all these countries, by, you know, Britain and Scotland, and for us it's, you know, some of the Arab countries. I'm not saying it's the same type of, you know, hostility, but just kind of always being the underdog, you know, always having problems. This is obviously your golden generation, and you've always obviously had a couple other ones, but it seems like it's your time. It's pretty cool that we happen to be in your group, and I'm very, very excited. I mean, I'm only going to be, I guess, in Cardiff for 36 hours, but I'm very excited to try and meet as many people I've spoken to on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere. And I want to put it out there that if anyone wants to meet anytime Saturday, they're welcome to write me on Twitter, and I'd really love to gather with as many people and just sit down and talk, whether it's over a beer or no beer, whatever. All Saturday, for the most part, I'll be free, except for the press conference. So whoever is interested, obviously also you guys, including you, Russell, anyone of your team. Maybe on Sunday we'll be enemies, or enemies on the pitch, but Saturday we're allowed to be friends.
Yeah.
It's really the most important thing to me, is connecting with people and speaking to people and learning about people, and great pleasure doing that.
Yeah, sorry to cut across. That's what's been really great doing this sort of podcast. I mean, we started it a year ago, and an opportunity to kind of connect with people and to share sort of different insights into the team and into the squad, and as the campaign's gone on, that sense of cohesion, I think, has really developed. And as I said, the team spirit, specifically the team, is great. You know, that's really, really clear, and it hasn't always been that way with Wales, but the bond between the fans and the squad as well is very, very close, and it's got closer, and that's been really something that's been, you know, really quite pleasant and nice to be part of, and it's kind of sort of spilled out, if you like, into the fans. There's not the rivalry on the terraces at Wales games between sort of people from, you know, following Swansea City, people following Cardiff City, because that has been a problem in the past. It's just a much better atmosphere, much more easygoing. There's a campaign to get people to wear red to the games rather than just, you know, normal clothes or club colours, you know, and that's developing as well. The atmosphere in the stadium has been absolutely phenomenal. I mean, for the Belgium game, it was spine tingling pretty much from the first whistle.
I want to ask you, I know you have to go, so I want to ask you really quickly.
Yeah.
For me, I'm writing a piece for Vice Sports when I'm there about the history, and one of the things I want to know is what kind of emotions, and I know it's a bit cliche, but what kind of emotions do you think we'll see from people if Wales beat Cyprus and then they get the 3 points against us on Sunday? I mean, is it going to be like frustrate, like 50 years of frustration finally being, you know, letting out? Can we see people cry? I mean, because at the end of the day, I mean, it's you know, you have rugby and cricket. Is Is football really close to the heart for that many fans? And, you know, let me ask you a more bigger question. Will people be celebrating, like, in downtown Cardiff late into the night, or is it that not your culture?
Well, it's probably a little bit of that culture. I think it doesn't help that it's a Sunday game, so people will have work the next day, or school the next day. I mean, I'm taking my seven-year-old to it, and he's only been to a one Wales game before.
This is his second
match. This will be his second. I mean, I got a piece just kind of taking shape in my head for our blog that's around. I'm quite sort of jealous of him, really, because I'm 30 something, I'm 38, and in my lifetime, or certainly, you know, in my sort of recollection then, we've got close twice, blew it, and never got close for the rest of that decade. And that's been something that some of the coaching team in the Welsh coaching team have cited as well as being a problem. We'll get close, and then we'll just disappear for the next sort of three or four campaigns. So, you know, for me at my age, this is something that's been something I've been looking forward to and hoping would happen. And if I'm honest, not really expecting it to happen for a large part of my lifetime. My lad is seven. All he knows is Gareth Bale being amazing and Gareth Bale being the most expensive player in the world and playing for Real Madrid and Aaron Ramsey and Joe Allen. All of this seems to be coming to him really naturally and just assumes that this is the sort of the natural order. And I keep having to tell him that it really isn't. So you're going to see, going back to your first question, you are going to see a lot of raw emotion and a lot of years frustration. Certainly, you know, people older than me, people who've had probably far more disappointments than me, who've travelled further and spent more money watching Wales abroad than I have, who are going to be very relieved. There will be some tears. I'm absolutely certain of that. But it will be joyous. It will be a happy time, and I think people will be celebrating. As I said, there'll be a few sore heads Monday morning, all being well. And if it doesn't happen, you know, it's only four points, you know, we still got two games left to draw on, and you know, Andorra at home is the last one. So, you know, we are assuming there that we'll be getting 3 points at home to Andorra, and I don't think there's any much doubt of that, frankly. So I think, you know, technically we won't have qualified because we will still have to go and earn those 3 points against Andorra. But I don't think the other teams can catch us. Unless results sort of go. And you know, from my point of view, and I made this point when we recorded our gang last week, is that now they're in this position, I don't want to just qualify, I want to win the group as well. So I don't want anybody to level at us next summer, Wales are only there because it's an expanded competition, you know, you got in through the back door. No, we won the group. And even if there was only 12 teams going to the European Championships next year, we still won the group. And it just takes away that, because that's been levelled at sort of Northern Ireland, because they're doing well. Scotland are doing okay in their group. And there's been that little sort of snide comment that, the Faroe Islands are doing well, and you know, other sort of traditionally smaller countries are doing well. Iceland, for instance. Oh, of course, it's only been that because it's an expanded competition. I think to qualify as group winners, it doesn't matter how many or how few teams are in the tournament. If you've won your group, you've got there by right. And that's a lot to, a lot of emphasis on that, I think, or there should be. But I think you're going to see, I think you'll see some raw emotion if it does go the way we hope it does over here. Yeah, it'd be good.
Well, I'm very excited, and I look forward to being there, to being in Cardiff.
I think you'll have a lovely 36 hours. Shame it's not longer. I'm certain there'll be people sort of looking to catch up with you via Twitter, and this will be out, I think, sometime Thursday, hopefully. And certainly ourselves will be good to catch up and share a beer or two. So
just keep me posted.
Yeah, we'll do. Looking forward to it. Thank you for your time.
And we'll talk soon.
Yeah, lovely. Cheers.
Okay. Have a good night.
Take care. Bye.